another edition of Shift and Steer. It's chilly.
What?
And I'm at Sunset Speedway in Omaha, Nebraska. This was the place I used to go to the stock car races when I was a kid. Excuse me. And my background today is a shot that I took when I was back there one year before they tore it down. Like so many of the great racetracks around the country. Yeah, Sunset Speedway got tore down also. I can't say that I ever got to go to the Sunset Speedway Inn because I was too young. But cool little bit of history for those who ever went to Omaha. Sunset.
That looks like a rent by the hour type of motel.
Yeah, it's
maybe
not
that's
that
why.
Inn. It's not that 100
mile
inn.
Per hour hotel.
It was a bar and a restaurant.
Maybe that's why you weren't allowed there while you were a kid.
No, you know why we went to Sunset Speedway? All of us went in high school to Sunset Speedway because they didn't card you at the beer stand. So we all
maybe that's why they're not there anymore.
Exactly. But no, they were there for decades, and it was like you'd see everybody from the high schools around there for the races. I mean, there were no dummies. They sold tickets and had people there filling the stands because if you looked like you were even close to 18, you know, you were getting a beer, and they were the big ones. Hey, who's helping us do the show today, man?
Well, now with that wonderful introduction, let's say hello to our friends at Geico. You guys, you've heard us talk about it before. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, we know it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing because we already have so much to do around our homes already. So just go to geico.com to get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
This is Michael Cohen. Joining me next week on Mea Culpa Podcast is the one and only Stormy Daniels.
There's so many things that he talked about with me that were so illegal that nobody ever touches upon.
That's right, folks. The conversation you've all been waiting for is finally happening. For the first time ever, we sit down to talk about what really happened that night in Donald Trump's hotel room.
He had stripped down to his underwear and was perched on the bed doing his best yet horrifyingly disturbing impression of Burt Reynolds.
Sex, politics, money, and crime. This one's got it all. Download this special episode of Mea Culpa beginning Tuesday, February 9th at midnight Eastern for the podcast event of the year. Mea Culpa, nothing but the truth.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Thanks, Geico. Right. Appreciate that.
And as Brad would call it, Geiker.
Geiker. You mean COVID? COVID?
And Geiker. And so that Geiker insurance.
And as Rick told me the other day, he goes, dude, as long as I've known you, you pronounce chocolate wrong. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, there's no R in it. You always say chocolate. And I go, geez. You know, it's like, you know, you think you know somebody, and then one day they throw at you that you pronounce chocolate wrong.
That's been driving him mad for two decades.
So go ahead, lay it on me, guys. Is there anything that I pronounce wrong that you think of in the car world?
We'll let you know.
Yes, they're actually.
Okay, what is it?
Hold on, it slipped my mind. Hold on, it'll come to me because it is one of the words that you always say all the time, and it just, I don't know, it comes off as like very Canadian, this accent, like just the
really?
One, yeah. I don't know. It'll come to me later, but
you know, I was out. With
Let
my
me
guy.
Check my list, Brad. This is my hater Brad list. Here.
Yeah, I got to check my list because Brad always calls it, you know, the far R-I.
My name's Derek, by the way.
But hey,
Hold on a second. We've already been doing this show for like 3 minutes now. We haven't talked about the new Ford Raptor.
Well, the very first thing I want to say is that everybody's missing out on the on our great backgrounds. Matt Cave with his lightning sitting on the background.
Yeah.
Aaron with his studio. And I've been throwing up these vintage photos and things of my shop and stuff like that. So don't forget, guys, if you can't make it to our YouTube page or our Facebook page to watch the videos, we recently on our Instagram page did throw up some of the fun backgrounds that we did. And I even tossed in a little snowy atmosphere up at Aaron's just because I figured it was the background he lives in. So, the Ford Raptor, they had a big announcement just this last week. And
yes.
Matt, fill us in because it was pretty exciting. I know we talked about it previously. We're still going to see a V6. However, there's something else on the horizon.
Yeah, so it was exciting and a little disappointing at the same time. First of all,
it's dinosaur driven.
kudos to Ram and Ford for having this fun little rivalry of ridiculous vehicles, right? Like, obviously with the trucks, but you know, between Hellcats and GT500s and, you know, and Ford Performance kind of hinted to me unofficially, they said, you know, we're really looking at the GT500 engine as a crate engine in their performance parts catalog because there's Demon engines and Hellophant engines and things like that, which are just ridiculous horsepower engines. So
play while you can.
Yeah. So, you know, Ram TRX comes out, by the way, Ram TRX comes out after a decade of Ford Raptors, right? And, you know, so Ford has already been able to sort of make their point and prove the success of these things. They made a bunch of money off of these trucks. They sold a lot of them over the years. We drove the first gen Raptors and then we drove supercharged versions. I drove a Roush supercharged version and then drove the recent twin turbo ones. And, so TRX comes out with, 700 plus horsepower, Bilstein shocks, incredible suspension, on-road capabilities and off-road capabilities that exceeded the current Raptor. So of course, Ford had to say, hey, you know, enough's enough, as people are just starting to take deliveries of the TRX. Goldberg just got his a week ago, which by the way, he promptly sent out to Gearhead Fabrications to get a 900 horsepower upgrade. In typical Goldberg fashion. So he's excited about that. So the new Ford Raptor is it's very cool. It's got some aggressive styling. It's got a new kind of bulge on the hood.
It's got a new bulge.
A new bulge on the hood, which is kind of cool looking. 35-inch tires with optional 37-inch tires. It is this twin-turbo V6 engine, which is currently 450 horsepower. The new one, they said, will probably get a bump in horsepower, but they didn't say what it was going to be. It has a little more suspension travel than a TRX. It has a little bit more ground clearance than a TRX. And it has a little bit more towing capacity and hauling capacity than a TRX. And again, this is just for bragging rights. It's not going to make a difference because when I say a little more, like, hauling capacity, it's like 90 pounds.
Whose shocks are they using on that truck, Matt?
Who's what?
Whose shocks?
They're using Fox, but Fox is using Fox. They're using Fox previously. It's a full active suspension now. I think you can adjust things on the fly. We'll get more information about that. It does has the revised interior of the new F-150s, right? Because we talked about the new F-150 quite a bit. Driving those. So it does have a lot of that design, a lot of that technology. And what is kind of cool is you can get a Raptor. I get the Raptor's sort of the high speed off-road fun thing. It's not really, you know, we talked about the job site, for the F-150 Power Boost hybrid, but if you do want to go away for the weekend and, you know, throw your motorcycle in the back or do a little, you know, do some off-roading in your Raptor, you can get it with an available 2-kilowatt generator. So you can still, you know, it's not the full hybrid truck, but it has a built-in generator on it, which is quiet and efficient and basically doesn't take up space because it's built into the truck. So if you do want to go out for the weekend and power some tools or power a little campsite and pop a tent in the back, you can get that as well. So that's kind of cool having that power on board. But yeah, so the big news was everybody wanted a GT500 engine, a V8, 700 plus horsepower. And the Raptor was like, no, it's the same V6. However, that's the Raptor that is available this summer for $60,000. Next year, there's a Raptor R that's coming out. And the Raptor R is very much expected to have the big V8 engine in it with over 700 horsepower.
The one fly in the ointment, though, that Ford announced yesterday is that, and this doesn't relate just to the Raptor, but their truck production is being slowed down because of chip availability for all the onboard computers. They're having some problems.
This is affecting everyone. As a matter of fact, I think GM has taken a really big hit. I guess they were just using it more, whatever chip was available or something, but to the point where they're going to have to, they're recalculating their financials for the year because of that. Yeah.
All these oddball things that are, pandemic effect, who would have ever thought, oh, you can't make cars because you need a chip to make, there it is,
I took the Defender in yesterday after a year and a half to get the stereo put in. And he's like, I can't get Panasonic or Sony, head units right now, like the models we wanted. He's like, I just got delivery of four of them that I ordered last March. He goes, he just got them like the day before.
And along that lines, I read an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal that it was an investigative report about, have you guys seen on the news about all these ships off our coast out here? If you drive
one,
just
freighter after freighter. At Wall Street Journal did an article about there have been like this inflated amount of accidents on those ships where containers are falling over the side.
Yep.
It's like they're going, all right, we've waited here long enough. Push them over the side and let's get out of here. And I mean, it's like, there's some of your head units. There's some
a lot of this
stuff people are waiting for. Cause they
can't get it. It's funny because the other things, what else is affected is when we were super locked down because of COVID, March, April, June, all those months, the beverage industry had a hard time making carbonated beverages because they take that carbonation from the air, which is largely produced by the amount of cars on the road. So we couldn't get bubbles in our drinks.
Jeez. Who would have thunk it?
Hey. That's right. So get out there and drive those Teslas, and so we can drink our bubbles. Oh wait, not the Tesla.
We've been talking about the TRX and the Raptor.
Yeah.
And did you guys hear that they're going to sell 001 VIN number one of the 2021 Ram 1500 TRX at Barrett Jackson?
And Bronco number one.
Of course they are.
And Bronco number one. But you know what you can't buy? You cannot buy the 2021 Dodge Durango SRT Hellcat because all 2,000 of those 710 horsepower Durangos have been sold out. So
you know, as goofy as they are, I kind of dig that thing. It's a full-size three-row, SUV that does 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds and runs 1150s in the quarter mile.
Isn't it cheaper than the Trackhawk?
Yes, it's cheaper than a truck.
And you can still
same vehicle.
And you can still tow your red eye to the track to race.
Right, right.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic. But here, this is what came out recently was Tim Kuniskis, CEO of Dodge. He's a boss over there. He's been there for a while. He's come and gone, but he's made a lot of things happen with Dodge, with these Hellcat engines and whatnot. Something like 50,000 Hellcat engine vehicles have sold since it debuted in 2014 or something like that. So just been doing a phenomenal job with it. And he's basically said, we understand there's a demand for horsepower. Our customers want horsepower. He said, however, due to increased regulation that's coming down the pike and Biden administration and whatever, good or bad, however you want to look at it, he's like, making that horsepower with big V8 engines is just not going to be the future of the company. It has to happen. Yeah, it has to happen with smaller engines, electrification, EV hybrids. You know, we've always said, you know, there's sort of two sides to the EV world that we've seen. There's, you know, there's the whole
the AC and the DC.
Well, yeah, there's that. But it's you know, there's the, you know, you get a Prius because of the fuel economy, and then you get an Acura NSX because of the performance, you know, filling in some of that performance gap, especially on a turbo engine, filling in that turbo lag. But to see Dodge start to, you know, get into that, and other car makers will as well, not just in the supercar world, but, you know, when you start to see a Dodge Charger, you know, in a few years from now, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, the Dodge Charger SRT Hellcat may be a twin turbo V6 engine with electric motors. You know,
it'll be a Hellcat.
Yeah, right. It's electric. Literally going to, it's going to purr instead of growl. Yeah. Because it's electric or partly electric. So I don't know. It's kind of a interesting way to look at things as we roll into new regulation. But anyway, I was leading into, before this happens, you know, Dodge and Ram and Ford are like, let's just throw a big engine in a truck and you know, in our TRX and in our cars and have one last hoorah with this. And then Cadillac's like, well, don't forget us, because Cadillac has released the CT4V Blackwing and the CT5V Blackwing. And these are absolutely fantastic. First of all, the CT4. Now, we drove the predecessors, CTSV and ATSV. Probably not Aaron, but Brad and I have.
They don't have those in Tahoe, Aaron.
So. We two out of three. Yeah.
And they are wonderful cars. They drive so nice. They handle nice, and they've got the horsepower to get it happening. You know.
So Cadillac wanted to get into this playing field before they have to switch to electrification hybrid. So let's start with CT4V, CT4V Blackwing, 3.6 liter twin turbocharged V6. It's not a bad place to start. 472 horsepower. Sounds pretty good. 10 speed automatic transmission, 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. And an available 6-speed manual, which is fantastic. Yeah. You can get the little sedan with a true manual transmission. Top speed 189 miles an hour, and this thing just scoots along. Electronically controlled limited slip differential. It has oil coolers all over the place, which is fantastic. It has a lightweight titanium connecting rods, revived crankshaft with revived counterweights on it. The manual transmission has rev matching and a no lift shift functionality built into it. So you could just bang gears in this little car, which is great. Now, let's say you want to step it up a little bit. Let's say you want to go to the bigger sedan. You want to go to the CT5. The CT5V Blackwing gets the 6.2 liter supercharged V8, which is kind of a carryover from the CTSV, but it's 668 horsepower and 659 pound feet of torque. Now, the CTSV was 640 horsepower. This new one is 668. So a slight bump. You can, of course, get it with their new 10 speed automatic transmission. Again, all the differential coolers, transmission coolers, limited slip diff, rear wheel drive. But you can get this goddamn thing with a 6-speed manual transmission.
That's badass.
It's 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds, but who cares? It's rear wheel drive. It's just limited by traction. It's got a 200 mile an hour, top speed. And that's off the showroom floor. It's basically just got the hot rod V8 in it with the supercharger.
I mean, it's like $85,000. It's a lot of car for the money.
Wow, that's not bad.
I mean, a little tune here and there, a K&N filter, maybe a cat-back exhaust, a blower pulley. You're going to be at 780 horsepower in this
thing. Yeah. And, lose 30 pounds. Hey!
It's all limited by traction at this point, which kind of makes it fun. You know, I drove the GT500 on the track, and then recently when I went to Speed Vegas, the track out there with Adam Carolla, you know, I drove, you know, the Porsches and the Ferrari, and he drove the Ferrari 488 as well. And I said, you need to drive that GT500 because you race vintage race cars, rear wheel drive, big tire, ridiculous amount of horsepower. I said, you need to see the modern version of that thing. And he drove, not only did he get into the GT500, but it was breathed on by the guys at Shelby American who are right next door. They completely recalibrated the suspension and the shifting points of that DCT transmission. And then they gave it a little bump in horsepower to a little over 800 horsepower. And it's just loud. And because it's a track car for Speed Vegas, they just took the catalytic converters off and ran a straight pipe to the muffler with no cats. It's just loud.
Gorgeous.
And when they breathed on it, did they wear masks just to...
Yes, that's the rule, is they had to do it through the N95 mask to get it done. It was just a loud and
approved. They would have done it without a mask, how much horsepower that thing would have had.
It's not the fastest car around the track, especially when you're looking at Ferrari 488, but they have like a half mile straightaway, and it's just a rocket. Like, as soon as you get out of that turn and you get a little bit of traction under those tires, it just screams down that straightaway. It just blows everything away. So it's their fastest, like in a straight line. And then, you know, it hauls ass around the track. But the idea that now you can get into a full-size Cadillac sedan. And look, guys, this is a guilty pleasure car. I know you're thinking the automatic is so much easier to drive. You don't have to shift. You don't sit in traffic. All of these new cars, the clutches are easy. They shift wonderfully. And if you want one of these things, buy the goddamn manual transmission. Right. You're going to have so much fun with it. And in 8 years from now, when the wife makes you put it on Bring a Trailer, you're going to get so much more money for it.
Yep.
Or, by the way, ladies, if you're buying this thing, get the manual transmission now. And in 8 years from
now, take off the heels, put on the flats.
When the husband makes you put it on Bring a Trailer because he wants a monster truck or something, and you'll get more money for it.
I've told you guys the story about when I lived down in Newport and I took Charlotte in to buy a new Porsche, and she found out they only came in manual transmissions, you know, back then. And so my brand new 911, you know, wide body slant nose went out the window because of that. Well, it happened to me again. A fan of the show, he reached out to me about a week and a half ago, and he said, hey, I've got a Mustang GT, and this thing is a cream puff. It's got 20,000 original miles. It's white, tan interior, and he sends me photos over of it. And then he tells me what he wants for it. I'm like, going, wow.
Well, first what year?
What year? 64 okay. up?
I was leading up to that. No. It was a later model car. It was an 07, okay?
All right.
But really nice. And it was a GT, and it had manual transmission. Now, most of those come automatic now because everybody orders automatics, dealers order automatics. And it had the manual. And I thought, wow, this would be a great little extra car to have. I could tell Charlotte it could be hers and she could drive around in it. So I show it to her and she's, oh, that's cute. I liked it when we had our Mustang and when she had her Fox body way back when. Then she saw the stick and she went, oh, I'm not going to drive it. I go, oh, come on. Nope, that was it. That was all she wrote. And so I called a friend of mine who went over and he gleefully called me like a half hour later. Dude, you turned out of that Mustang. That thing was like it was brand new out of the showroom. It was so nice. And he like bought it on the spot. And I was like, it was over in Arizona. And it was a really nice car. And he bought it. He's got it.
What kind of friend is this that you go, hey, I'm thinking about buying a car. Will you go look at it for me? And he goes, hey, I got there and it was sold. And literally he didn't tell you he bought it.
No, that wasn't it. I called him because I knew he would like it. And I said, hey, I'm not going to buy it because Charlotte said she wouldn't drive a stick. So if you're interested in it, and it was real close to his house. He was like maybe 10 minutes away. He went over and he called me. How did you get over there so fast? You know, he got over there, bought it and called me back and he was already back home. I'm like going, geez, man. And he said it was like brand new. He said the car just, they kept it in the garage on a charger. And
all right. So now you got to tell us how much it was.
No, I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you off the air. I don't think it's fair to the guy who sold it or bought it. Because
yeah, but you didn't say who sold it or bought it. You just said friend.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, when you're...
Well, come on, Matt. We know it's in Arizona, so, you know, we can probably find out.
No, it was never even listed. He called me first, and I was like, so if anybody wants to call me first with really cool stuff, let me know.
Yeah, that you can turn down.
Yeah. if you're going to sell something to Brad with a manual transmission, go ahead and call me first.
No, yeah. If it's something I would drive, then I don't care. But if my wife wants to drive, no.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is you allow your wife to dictate whether you buy something or not, whether it has
for her car.
Man. For her car, right?
Hey, first of all.
Dude, you've always got to do that when you're married. You go, hey, I'm going to buy this new boat for you. So you can go out and...
Right? My wife thankfully finally decided to drive a stick, and like I said before, her dream car was a CJ5, you know, a Jeep. So now she's not struggling so much anymore. She's doing a pretty good job. So now I can just eliminate automatics altogether. Everything's a standard from now on. So
yeah, right. But when you drive a car that's, you know, hell, even the Fox bodies back in the day, you know, a very notchy transmission was the Terminator Cobras, you know, the 04 or 03s, you know, and now you hop in one of these new cars,
two finger shape.
Yeah. And you're just, it's just, and the clutch is easy. And you could just, you're like, you know what? I can sit in traffic with this. It's not that big of a deal, but man, my E46, when I had that racing clutch in it, I was like,
your legs getting tired.
Oh my God. That's I need a knee brace at this point. Yeah.
That's like some of the muscle cars I drove back in the day with the big racing clutch.
Oh yeah.
You just, and oh my God. But Aaron, you and I have driven a lot of vintage, you know, Ferraris, like the Boxers and the
stuff.
And I mean, those gated shifters and stuff.
Oh, yeah, nothing better.
That's when you thought, I get this.
Nothing better.
Boom, you'd miss. You know, it'd be like everything.
I love the old gated shifters. I got to say, I wish I could afford. I could buy a Ferrari. I just can't afford to own a Ferrari. you know, I wished I could because the driving experience.
A gated shifter. They sell them on eBay.
Yeah, right. But seriously, even a 308 or something, I still love those GT4s, but they're getting up 50, 60, 70, 80 grand now. But
yeah, I like a 355. I like the look of a 355.
My 348. I didn't have any balls though, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. But you wind them out, it's all about the sound. You know, who cares? Yeah. Who cares how fast or slow you're going as far as I'm concerned? I mean, should I drive an Isetta? That's 14 horsepower. It goes 35 eventually.
You know what? Where we all fucked up was we didn't buy them when they were dirt cheap and we could just have them in our garage. You know, it was like, now that they're popular, we all want them. And, you know, when I got rid of mine, I remember looking, maybe I'll get another one when you could get them for 30 grand. I mean, you know, it was like nothing. And
Well, the thing is a couple weeks ago when I was looking on Bring a Trailer, they had a 400i or 412 convertible, which is a rare convertible. It's a nice conversion.
Was it
and,
red?
I think no, it was like it was silver, but it ended up selling for like 47,000 or something. I'm going, man, but it had a $30,000 or $40,000. Yeah, it had $40,000 worth of service on it.
Well, that
$40,000, like recently, like within the last year, and you're killer. I don't care if it already had it. I'm not going near the thing. You know,
I've always said if I buy a vintage Ferrari, I also want to buy all the service manuals and the tools so that I can work on it myself. Because if you can work on it yourself, you know, but they're hard.
That's the thing. And there's an order to things. They're I don't want to say they're fiddly, but you kind of need to be an expert with Ferrari.
First.
And Lamborghini too. You know, they're handmade cars.
They just do something simple and the whole thing has to drop out.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. You talk about handmade cars. We've gone through our fair share. Adam Kroll has gone through his fair share of vintage Lamborghinis. We got one left. And we looked at a bunch of them, even though the Miras, and the e-brake is on the side of the seat. And we've literally been in some of the cars where it's on the left side of the seat by the door and some on the right side by the tunnel. And it just didn't make any sense at all. And finally, we just started talking, the test driver guy, Valentino, I think his name is. And we're like, why is this here? Why is this there? He's like, all the cars are hand built. He goes, it depends on who put it in. Sometimes he's left-handed, sometimes he's right-handed. Yeah. He's like, it was just easier for him to install it on that side. I was like, that's it? Literally, you could just do whatever you wanted? He's like,
we added the cable. We only have a shorter cable, so we've got to go on the left side.
Right. It was a Thursday, and Luigi was working, and, it was
I got a left-handed drill bit. I only go on the left side.
But same way, back at the Hot Rods by Boyd days, over by the old shop in Stanton, and I'm trying to think of the city it would have been. It was wherever Yamaha used to have their headquarters and where Mitsubishi used to be. Mm-hmm. They had a huge warehouse where every Ferrari imported in the United States landed first, and they would go through them, check them out. And we had a contract with them for a few years where if anything happened to them in shipping, they would come over to our shop to be repaired. And then we would take them back over. You know, it could be a scratch. It could be a
dent. Like body work and paint. Yeah. Mostly cosmetic. Yeah.
And talk about, we had conversations about that. How the 308 that was in here last week, it didn't, and they go, no, it was totally different. I mean, even emblems and stuff, because it'd be like, they changed emblems, midweek or whatever. And it was just, we're always getting, and we talked about it, they were hand-built cars, even back then. Yeah.
Well, I think I mentioned it before, even my Ducati 916 in 1995, I had really early one, probably one of the first, dozen in the country. I was fortunate enough because someone backed out and they called me next on the list, and I went and picked it up, and I saw a couple other guys, on Ducati Island, and I'm like, you have different, fasteners, and you have different, and they're like, whoa, shit, dude, you have like the titanium fasteners, and half of my bike was off, it was out of the race bins, and I got a lot more money for it when I sold it because it had all this race stuff on it. It had the magnesium, had all this stuff that wasn't part of production. It was like, we have to meet production, just start pulling the race parts off. And it was wild. It was pretty cool. So same, I guess just an Italian thing.
No, it's not. Because all of this changed worldwide, probably around mid-90s when the ISO standards came in. Because prior to that, we've all had these discussions, if you're into muscle cars, at muscle car events, where you'll have a Chevelle or a Corvette or a Hemi Charger or whatever it is, where, there can be one expert who says, oh, no, they never used that fastener. Bullshit, because they had to get that car down the assembly line and they didn't have the right fastener. So they ran over and got what they needed and put it on. And, that's where all these arguments about is it authentic or not. But it wasn't until they automated the assembly lines and they went to ISO standards that all of that became standardized. And the reason that we have these horrible cars now with everything has these wide stances with the no offset on the wheels because they want them to have the same assembly line, And
a word from our friends at Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
But even American cars had that hand-built thing where you know, hey, run over and get some manifolds from the Impala assembly line because, you know, we don't have them over here today, you know, and they had to keep getting stuff out the door. And it was,
yeah, it's funny because I'm starting to acquire some tools and some things that I've been wanting to get, and they're popping up on the trade. So, but I have a standard where, and I'd love to hear from some people on this too, because of where things were made after like partway through the 70s. I'm looking for everything like 74 and older, and all the machinery and all the tooling and all the tools and all the dies and all the things I'm getting, are pre like, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. And the quality difference is huge. I mean, yeah. Huge. Yeah. And you can rebuild stuff and you can sharpen stuff and it's still good. Oh, it's been sitting outside for 30 years. You sharpen it and the blade shears a, you know, 16 gauge piece of metal like nothing. I mean, it's really impressive, because things were still made by hand and things were still less, you know, no automation, and they weren't made overseas. And if so, they had combined parts, but they were still manufactured with the big hardy stuff here in the country. And I'll tell you, for tools, it's awesome. Pre-70s, this 30s, 40s, 50s.
The difference can be summed up in one little statement, which is back then things were made to last. Today,
yes,
they build them, yep, to fail at a certain rate so that they can sell you new,
yeah,
stuff. You know, it's like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, very seriously, I mean, that is something that they actually, you know, it's built in, you know, failure. It's like the Ford Lightnings, you know, the trucks, the
I'm familiar.
The older ones, you got to, yeah, change the motors,
like the one
you
match got right
the
there.
Exhaust, you got to change, yeah, the wheels, everything, just to keep them on the road, man. I mean, I think you had to change the emblems on that thing, didn't you, Matt?
I did. Mine was one of the rare, because they were rushing production, so they had to go to the Race Lightnings and get the titanium lug nuts. So I got
it. Russian production? That was made in Russia? No, it's, you know, it's one of the things we felt, you know, because, yeah, you talk about tools. I've got a bench grinder that my dad bought, and
right?
I think about it every once in a while. This thing still works, knock on wood, works, yeah, fantastic. And I think those bearings are 40 years old and they're still,
yeah,
whoa, yeah, you know, every time I hit the switch, it fires up and, yeah, you know, it says, yeah, yeah, made in Chicago, you know, and you just go, wow, man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really true. Yeah.
I mean, you think of Craftsman tools. Remember in the old days when they, you know, any Craftsman tool you bought, if it ever broke, you could bring it,
yeah,
back. And I remember walking in with a wrench that I used to like pry open something, you know, and they, no questions asked, they just go, yeah, here you go, here's a new one, you know. And you
so it's funny you say that, because I just rebuilt, I got a cam, a spline and everything vintage on eBay, and I just rebuilt one of my old Snap-on wrenches that actually broke a few teeth on,
oh,
on
really?
The spline on the ratchet part, and I found another one vintage that I've used to replace this one, because I didn't want a new one. I didn't want to call Snap-on and say, hey, you know, my wrench, you know, that the spline sheared, can you give me a new one? No offense, I didn't want a new one, because this one is really, really, really old and I love it. And I just lubed it, cleaned it, put the new spline in, and it's like butter, man. It's like a brand new, but it's old. I mean, you can see it's old. It's,
I love Snap-on,
the early 80s.
Mac and all these great tools that are out there, but there was just something about being able to run,
yeah,
out to the corner and buy what you needed in the bins at Sears, you know?
Yeah.
And they,
yeah,
were good, you know?
Yeah. And this one's all smooth. You know, all the edges are smooth to where I do have a new set of ratchets, and the edges are sharp. You know, I mean, you could actually file them down. They're sharp. But, you know, this one's round. It's got a round handle. Everything's smooth and it's beautiful.
I'll tell you guys another quick story past the statute of limitations, and I'm sure I have some tools that are in my toolbox. Not many, I think four or five wrenches that I was hand-me-down from my brother. And for years, I didn't know what the engraving on them was. You know, they were engraved.
Wentworth.
and I thought he just got them from somebody else. They were like somebody's initials and stuff. And then one day I was out in my garage and it came to me. My brother went to Scottsdale High School, and, mm-hmm, I realized SHS was from the auto shop at Scottsdale High School.
Oh!
And I was like,
yeah.
Ah, that's where those wrenches came from. My brother must have like funny. Put them in his pocket. And I just thought, how many wrenches disappeared from auto shop at local high schools around the country? You know?
Probably all of them.
Yeah. I was just I can't share my screen on here, but I was just looking back when in July I went to Snap-on headquarters.
I remember that, yeah.
And they have a museum at front, and we did some filming. So they pulled out like the very first Snap-on wrench set ever. Wow. And they're like, go ahead, grab it. You can mess with it. I was like, aren't you afraid we're gonna break it? They're like, no, it hasn't broken in 100 years. Like, what are you worried about?
Can you imagine you slam it on the ground and it shatters? And they're like,
yeah,
what'd you do? That'd be a great joke. Like, if everyone they made was like out of the sugar stuff, so you could
exactly,
like, everyone would break.
Oh yeah, throw it down. Nothing's gonna happen. Oh my god.
Yeah, but they have an incredible museum of not just some of the early tools, but there's a toolbox here, or there was actually like a whole tool. There's a tool bench with toolboxes and tools with like a pegboard. And what it was an old mechanic local to Snap-on headquarters started his business, seemed like 100 years ago. And after, I don't know, 80 years, 80 something years, because he was a teenager, he just called them up and he said, hey, you know, this is Bob. I've been working with you guys for 85 years. I'm retiring. If you want my stuff, come over. So they went over and they took his stuff. And then in their museum, they put it back together. They recreated his pegboard and his sign and all of his tools with a picture of him and one of the one of the original founders of Snap-on from back in the day. And like this, they just... In the, you know, it's going to be a, like an exhibit in their museum for a while.
Cool.
You know, that's say,
cool.
Well, they just put it on display. They're like, yeah, this is literally. And what's cool about it is, Aaron, you'd love it, is that's not just 80-year-old tools. That's 80 years of used tools.
Yeah.
This guy used that stuff again and again. You could just see like certain parts of the grip that get dirt and some get rubbed away with his hand that's kind of shinier, you know. It's just all the great patina on all of those tools, and they look fantastic.
You know, it's funny.
Damn it, Grandpa, I wanted those. Why'd you give them away?
Yeah, right. So man, it's funny, on my eBay listing right now, I have 3 saves, and they're all vintage tools from the 50s and 60s, Triumph and BSA toolkits. But they're toolkits that someone put together over the years, you know, and there's all these extra tools.
Yeah.
They're $300-$500, and, you know, I just have it committed because I don't need to. But I love looking at them and looking what they have in there and looking at the old wire brushes and trying to think, well, what did they use that for? Because it's clearly added and it's in this beautiful leather tool roll, leather and canvas.
Yeah.
But I love looking at that stuff because I love the forensics. You know, I love to look at these things. And when you buy used cars, you know, and you try to figure out what the owners were like, and just by the wear and tear on the vehicle or the artifacts you find, the seat or in the crevices, it's really fun. I love the forensics of this stuff, and right now tools are on my brain, so I'm finding old tools and going to, you know, some swap meets and finding an old toolbox of some guy. A machinist toolbox are really fun. I've got a machinist buddy who's handing me down his father's stuff, who used to work on the Titan missiles.
Oh, wow.
And he used to build big gears for the USS Enterprise, and he's getting rid, he passed away recently, and he's getting rid of a lot of his tools, and he's a fan, a cool guy, met him on Craigslist, and he says, I'm gonna go deep in the storage locker and grab some of the old stuff and tools that are back there, and I can't wait to see them, knowing that these were used to build, you know, missiles and gears for, you know, the warships. That's going to be awesome.
To destroy the world.
No, we're talking one man in his hands.
You should come down sometime, Aaron, and you and I can go to either the Long Beach or the Pomona swap meet. There's whole entire guys that have nothing but old tools for sale every time. And some, I've bought a lot of cool stuff out there. And speaking of which, our buddy Charles. He did you ever met when he was working with the company down in near Oceanside that did all of that made vacuum tubes? Have you ever seen?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And he called me one day and he said, "Hey, they're liquidating everything. If you want to come down, they're you know it's going to be pretty cheap. And I know you're into that stuff." And I was like, "Oh, cool, man,
huge vacuum tubes."
And he goes, "Right now." And I go, "Well, I can't come right now. Can I come tomorrow?" And he goes, "No, it's like right now." And they had sold everything they could sell, and then the rest was going to go on the trash heap. But I'm talking about the machines that they made them with looked like something out of a movie set. All the dials, all the stuff. And I was like, man. And plus they had a bunch of tools and toolboxes and stuff.
Yeah.
But no, I couldn't get down there, you know.
It's Charlotte would have said no because they're manual transmission tools.
You're right.
She's like, you have to do these tools by themselves?
Can you put a 6-speed in with those tools? I go, yeah, you can. She goes, no, you can't have them.
Yeah. Well, you know, real quick, I think we should give a nod to Dale Walksner. We lost him a couple days ago now, and he was a founder of the Wheels Through Time motorcycle. You might have seen him on American Pickers and all kinds of TV shows. Talk about a historian, old tools, everything there runs. I mean, he was a great man, and it's a sad loss for the community of motorcycles and automotive history. So
it seems like
tip the hat.
It seems like we're losing a lot of people lately. You know, it's just every time I go on and look, I go, what the heck, what's going on? And you just kind of say, and Rick and I were talking about this morning. And what we were talking about is that there's some elderly people. Sure, there's, you know, but I think what some of this also was is people are stressing out, people that are having problems because of the COVID and things like that. And I had a friend of mine found out last night that passed away. I don't know. Did you guys know Mitch Henderson? Texas car builder, good buddy of mine, and in his mid like 40s, and had a heart attack. And this guy is a guy who he built a lot of really prolific cars. He built a C10 a few years back that was that putty color that showed up at SEMA. And he always used our wheels, and he built the red rum Camaro, and he built the Tech 9 Camaro, that one with the golden black Bond Speed wheels that was like putty with the gold stripes, and really a badass 69 Camaro. And I just found that out last night. I was like, what the heck, man? You know, it's it just kind of
I always say posts.
Tomorrow, today could be your last day, you know? You just never
That's why we're buying cars and bikes
and tools
and old tools
and old tools.
I know. So Charlotte has more to liquidate when I go.
That's right.
And speaking of forensics, I had mentioned that I got the smart car, the donor for the Isetta that I'm going to rip apart and rebody with an Isetta. And I was doing the forensics on the car, and it was like full of pug hair because there was a Pug's Life sticker on it. So it must have been pug hair. But I have a feeling that the previous owner was a heavy guy, because the whole left side of the car is sacked out. The front and rear suspension is like 2 inches sacked out. I mean, totally sacked out. And I'm going, man, what's wrong with this car? It's like, and I'm looking underneath going, the suspension's okay. Nothing's bent. And I'm looking at it, and it's totally like cockeyed. And I'm going, you must have been a big dude. So then knowing that, I went in and looked at the condition of the seat, the wear marks, you know. You know how when interiors on newer cars wear down, they wear down to the urethane. And the urethane is often dyed, you know, gray or tan or cream, kind of a flesh color. And so all the surfaces were tan, worn down. I'm like, oh, man, this guy was heavy handed. You know, everything's worn down. And then I pull the seatbelt because I always steam out the seatbelts because they always get sticky. And I'm looking at the seatbelt and it's got tan on it. And I'm like, well, seatbelts aren't tan. You know, it's black. And I'm looking at it and I start steaming it and scraping it off. And it smells like clay. And I'm going, whoa, it's clay. I don't know if he was on a job site or he was a foreman or a gardener or something, but on all the surfaces that you touch, there was this creamy tan clay, like a silt. And I steamed it all off, and it's the interior is mint. And it's totally mint, 118,000 miles. And it's mint condition because it was covered in clay.
That was just a big, huge buildup of skin cells, and you sniffed.
Oh, man.
Clay colored.
I bought a truck once where it was an old truck with an old style metal steering wheel. Yeah. And I went over to look at it, and the guy wasn't there, the wife was. And this thing was immaculate, but the steering wheel was like cockeyed. And when I went back to buy it and pay for it, the guy was there and he was like 300 pounds. And I saw, because when he got in it, he grabbed the steering wheel, and I was like, bad, get to play steering wheel. So,
but isn't that amazing?
We're to the end of the show, aren't we?
Oh, no.
You got anything else?
Yes, I've got a
Lexus.
I've got, unfortunately, I've got another call to jump on.
I know, we're having fun. We're on a roll.
In 60 seconds. So more fun next week. We'll get into this stuff some more. Be sure to follow us at shiftandsteer.com and our social media. And you can see these video presentations. If you like the podcast, you want to see the video version for some ungodly reason, you'll be able to do that on the Facebook.
You can see my new glasses.
And on our YouTube page. Don't forget.
And our YouTube page. Yeah, there you go.
Everybody. YouTube page. And go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and leave a comment. That helps us. And with YouTube, we don't even see the ratings anymore. So hopefully, I'll just say we're probably number 2. So
definitely.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Find me at Bradley_Fanshawe. Matt, where can they find me?
I'm Matt Moderator, and on all the social medias.
Double A Run.
Hagar in the Rat Runner's Garage.
Okay, everybody, and thanks to Geico for continuing to support the show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.